The opera opens on the plains of Hungary, where Faust contemplates his life. We hear immediately that this is not a traditional opera. Most operas start with some kind of oral frame, something to help us make the transition from our real lives into the world of the performance. The most obvious type of frame is an overture with a clear structure, something that starts with a bang. We hear the music and know it is time to stop talking to our neighbours and turn off our cell phones. Overtures don't have to be loud to get our attention. The prelude to Traviata begins softly, with a mournful foreshadowing of the heroine's death by consumption. The noise of Violetta's party when we get to it makes for a dramatic transition to the present. But even at the beginning, we are in no doubt that the music has begun. By contrast, Don Nacion sneaks up on us. After six measures of what we think might turn into an orchestral prelude, we instead hear Faust's thoughts. It sounds as if we have started somewhere in the middle. In fact, we've not started at the middle, but at the end. Faust is an old man, and his thoughts are reflected in words that are more poetry than concrete statements. "Aged winter has given way to spring," he observes. "Nature is revived." Faust's short aria is followed by a 3-minute orchestral interlude featuring themes from later scenes. This is both odd and effective. Odd because the curtain is already up. When an opera begins with an overture, we understand the conventions at work. The lights in the theatre are down, but usually so is the curtain. As at a symphonic concert, we don't expect to be looking at something while the orchestra serves up a pastiche of musical ideas to be fleshed out later. Instead, Berlioz has raised the curtain and had us listen in on Faust's meandering thoughts. It is spring. The birds are singing. And then what little action there is brought to a halt by the orchestral interlude. Stage directors throw up their hands in frustration, because how exactly do you choreograph nothing? Berlioz, however, knows what he intends, and soon we will as well. A typical overture has no dramatic function, but Berlioz's orchestral introduction has an important one. The music we hear is that of the Hungarian march and the peasant dance from later scenes. In opera, you sing almost everything, but because of dramatic convention, we pretend that the characters are speaking or thinking, or doing whatever their characters would do in real life. Except not always. When Cherubino sings the song he has composed for the Countess, that is a song. Similarly, both a peasant dance and a military march represent moments when the music is supposed to be really happening. Why is this important? Because what we are hearing is real life intruding on Faust's age-induced daydreaming. He's watching the flowers, and he hears a military march. The boundaries of operatic convention are being blurred. It is moments like this that make people say that Don Nacion isn't an opera at all. In a concert hall or a church, you would not think twice about listening to Faust's internal thoughts expressed in music for 7 minutes. When you are looking at a 100-foot-wide stage and nothing is happening, Berlioz seemed to enjoy torturing stage directors. Fortunately, the full energy of the peasant celebration now breaks on the somnolent Faust. We still don't have any action in furtherance of the plot, but a big choreographed dance number we understand.
Oh,
concludes scene two. And scene three has a mere 50 seconds of Faust saying, in effect, "Ah, I hear the sound of soldiers on the march," before we get the long orchestral Hungarian march. When Berlioz named this 4 minutes of orchestral interlude the Hungarian March, he was being literal. As the stage directions tell us, Faust watches the Hungarian army marching by. And that finishes part one. If you're a bit confused, I don't blame you. We expect the Faust legend to begin with Faust's bargain with the devil. The devil makes his pupil young again, at which point Faust takes off to have some fun. Only then does he meet his beloved Marguerite and her soldier brother. Berlioz gives us none of that, at least not yet. As part one ends, Faust is still a spectator, watching world-shaking events from the sidelines. He is not invited to the peasant celebration, and he is equally distant from the war all around him. And why is it the Hungarian army? Isn't Faust German? In fact, the idea that Faust visited Hungary is unique to Berlioz. In February of 1846, while working on the score of Don Nation, the composer himself visited Hungary, arranging and conducting concerts of his own works. The march, which was originally performed as a standalone orchestral piece, drew its main theme from Hungary's unofficial anthem. It proved immediately popular with audiences, so Berlioz worked it into the opera on the theory that Faust would have been as likely to visit there as anywhere else. Notice that the scenes in Don Nation are quite short. The whole piece is less than 2 hours of music, and instead of being divided into acts, it's divided into four so-called parts. Traditional theatre usage numbers scenes within an act, so the first scene of Act 4, for example, becomes Act 4, Scene 1. But in Don Nation, the scenes are numbered sequentially from 1 to 19, with scene 20 being the epilogue. Scene 4 is the first scene of part 2. We don't have to look far to understand why. When Berlioz began to compose Don Nation, he started with his 1829 composition Eight Scenes of Faust. In other words, the scene numbering is yet another clue that Don Nation is as much an oratorio as it is an opera. Back in his native Germany, Faust has become so disenchanted with life that he contemplates suicide. His studies have got him no closer to understanding the universe. Just as Faust is raising a cup of poison to his lips, he hears the singing of an Easter hymn outside his window.
Thank you.
This breathtaking choral music reawakens in Faust his faith in God. Don Nacion is not surprisingly overflowing with the religious references and questions. As the son of a devout Roman Catholic mother and a skeptical father, Berlioz had a complicated and sometimes antagonistic relationship with the Church. No sooner has Faust's belief in God been reignited than who should appear but God's opposite number, the devil Mephistopheles. Faust is not long in doubt about the identity of his exciting visitor. He asks Mephistopheles his identity, but when the devil responds that he is the spirit of life, the source of all happiness and pleasure, Faust answers, "Well then, poor devil, show me your marvels." Mephistopheles tells him to forget philosophy and experience life. Faust readily agrees. This is angular, exciting music full of strange harmonies, but more is yet to come. Mephistopheles transports Faust to Auerbach's cellar, a real and well-known tavern in Leipzig where I have actually been myself. Goethe used to frequent the cellar in his student days, and it was he who first inserted the tavern into his Faust play. The denizens of the cellar praise the pleasures of drinking and smoking, in a harmonic texture almost as dense as the air in the cellar itself. Don Nacion is an enormous undertaking for any opera or symphony chorus, filled with complicated rhythms and extensive division and subdivision of the vocal lines. The reason the chorus has such challenging music in Don Nacion is that it carries large portions of the opera. Unlike the more familiar Gounod opera, Don Nation only has four principal characters. Any opera based on the Goethe play must include Faust, Mephistopheles, and Marguerite. But Berlioz jettisons Marguerite's brother Valentin, her neighbour Martha, and Faust's servant Wagner from the Goethe original. The only other character in Don Nation is Brander, one of the drinkers in the tavern. Brander's contribution is a snappy but grisly drinking song in which he recounts how a rat in the kitchen fell in love. Hiding in the stove, the poor rat was roasted alive.
Dans le fourneau, le pauvre s'y recrut pourtant se cacher très bien. Mais il se trompait, et le pire c'est qu'on y fit retirer enfin la charmante méchante fille de son malheur et bien malheur. Ah, c'est elle comme il grille, il a vraiment l'amour au
The song is written in a simple style, but this is because the song itself is only the warm-up. Parodying the church music that permeates Don Nation, the drinkers sing Amen, paying mock tribute to the dead rat in a complicated but fantastic choral fugue. Auerbach's cellar is the longest scene in the opera, and it ends with the Chanson de Mephistopheles, a song about a foolish prince who knights a flea.
Mais c'est tout ce qu'il y a à dire, c'est que les gens de vous, sans annoncer rien à dire, se grattaient tout le jour. Quelle politique, appelez-nous leur destin, et déclinez nos piques, et creusez leur destin.
The character of Mephistopheles is sung by a baritone. This is exactly what we expect. Boito's Mephistopheles is a bass, Gounod's is a bass baritone, and Nick Shadow from Stravinsky's Rake's Progress is a baritone. Meyerbeer's Robert le Diable is a tenor. But, as we find out in the course of that opera, Robert isn't really the devil, he's the devil's son, and Robert's father Bertrand is a bass. All of which is to say that the bigger the troublemaker, the deeper the voice. Except that in Berlioz's eight scenes from Faust, Mephistopheles is a tenor. Berlioz only bowed to a more traditional casting when he expanded his scenes into a full evening's presentation. Faust's deal with the devil has not been made explicit, but Faust is definitely not interested in carousing. He asks Mephistopheles to take him someplace less coarse and brutal. The devil complies by transporting them both to the woods on the banks of the Elbe, where Faust observes a magical chorus of gnomes and sylphs, and has his first vision of Marguerite. Faust falls asleep in the grass, while sylphs dance a ballet on the river bank.
Thank you.
The French fashion for including ballets in operas dated back to the 18th century. Nothing could have been more conventional, but in the hands of Berlioz, this moment makes the scene. Part two ends with a group of students and soldiers singing to the glories of love and of war.